Hello and welcome to Volume 147 of Capital Ideas Live. In today's issue, we'll talk about being paid to not cut trees. We'll learn more about casualty losses, we'll discuss hunter safety, and we'll hear about some new proposed tax increases. This program is brought to you through the generous contribution of Forester Search, a service that makes it easier to connect landowners with consulting foresters. You can access the site through foresterssearch.com, or there's a link on this page, and you'll be given a roster of consulting foresters who can guide you through the next steps you'll face as a forest landowner. I'm Hayes Brown with the Alabama Forest Owners Association, and I'll be your host for today's discussion. There are a number of tax increases proposed by the Biden administration. Some will affect forest owners, so we've asked Palmer Schoening, chairman of the Family Business Coalition, to help us understand these issues. Welcome back, Palmer.
Thanks, Hayes.
What tax increases are on the table that could hurt forest landowners?
Well, most family foresters are classified as small businesses, and as you mentioned, there are a number of changes being proposed to small business taxation. First, Democrats in Congress would like to raise the top individual tax rate from 37 to 39.6%, and that's a rate which most small businesses pay. Next, there's a 20% small business deduction, and that's kind of how they cut taxes for small businesses through the Trump tax cut. And there's proposals to change that deduction. And then, of course, we have this new double death tax, which really could wreak havoc on private forest land.
Let's talk about that. Some people are talking about the double death taxes on capital gains that the Biden administration is proposing. What is that?
Well, currently a family that pays the estate tax will receive what's called a step-up in basis when that property passes to the next generation. That means if you pass on, for example, 10,000 acres and the heir sells that property the next year, they will not pay any capital gains taxes. And that's because the basis has been adjusted upon the land passing to the heir. Now, this proposal would tax any unrealized capital gains at death, meaning the land that is appreciated, and that's oftentimes through multiple generations, heirs will now not only face the 40% estate tax, but also a new capital gains tax at death. And oftentimes that can be an even greater hit than the death tax. So as a coalition, the Family Business Coalition, we have 154 small business associations as members, and we're on fire on this issue, lobbying Capitol Hill, and one of the supplementary documents I provided is our coalition letter, and that shows all the different associations that are members of the Family Business Coalition. And I also provided a list of House Democrats and moderate Senate Democrats that were lobbying. And so if folks are listening now and they could access those lists, I'd really encourage folks to, if they have a member that they know or that they're in their district, to contact those members and help us lobby on this issue, because right now Congress is moving at a breakneck speed to try to pass some of these tax increases. Hey,
is the most effective way to push back on tax hikes simply, as you might suspect, just contact your member of Congress? And are there any particular members of Congress that are more influential and could use some help in understanding the effect of this on forest landowners?
Well, it is at this point. There are quite a few groups involved with our lobbying efforts, but every little bit helps. And so if this is an issue that affects you and you're listening, we would urge you to contact your member of Congress. Obviously, Senators Shelby and Tuberville are on our side on this one. But if folks listening happen to be in the districts for those members that I provided in those supplementary documents, it would certainly be worth calling and mentioning that, in particular, this new double death tax should be off the table.
Okay. Well, thanks, Palmer. We appreciate that. In January of this year, we interviewed Zach Parisa with Sylvia Terra, who described his company's one-year contracts to defer harvests in exchange for money paid by corporations that want to be seen as carbon neutral. That company has now changed its name to NCX and has begun several rounds of exchange agreements between landowners and net zero pioneers, as they're called. Dan Chappell with the Alabama Forestry Commission has studied this voluntary market and can help us learn more. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you, Hayes.
Can you help us understand what NCX is and what it offers to forest landowners?
I will do that. The NCX, that stands for the Natural Capital Exchange, and as Mr. Parisa would have referred to, this is a marketplace for harvest deferral credits. So they act essentially as a broker, as a middleman between these large companies that have made promises that they want to be carbon neutral, carbon negative, and, well, how do you fulfill that promise? Well, here in Alabama and across the South and across the country, we have landowners who are growing carbon as on their landscape in the form of trees and timberland. And so what they've done is found that there, as foresters will know, that there's an age for trees where financial returns are optimized in terms of harvest rotation length. And then there's also an age where the carbon storage is optimized. And so what they do is they are willing to pay money to take money from the large companies who want to be carbon neutral and pay the landowners to fill in that gap in the middle between financial optimization and carbon optimization, so that more carbon stored on the landscape. They've got what you might call the academic research to back this up. So when a company makes a promise that they're carbon neutral and they buy these credits, according to academia, they are telling the truth, and that's what makes this possible.
What gives an idea of what type of landowner might want to consider participating in a program like NCX?
I talk to landowners all the time who call me. I'm here with the Alabama Forestry Commission, of course, and so I'm not advertising for NCX, but we are trying to get information out there. It seems like a very exciting prospect for our landowners in that, are the good stewards of the land that we have, and we'll probably be listening to this program, have an opportunity to realize financial gains for good management decisions. There's no acreage minimum with this, which is really amazing. Carbon projects from the past, you tended to have to be not just a large, but a very large landowner to become involved with this. There's not. Of course, if you only own 10 acres, then it wouldn't be a very large financial return, but you're still eligible. On top of that, there's no investment on your part monetarily. You don't pay any money. This is done. You get online, you click your parcels, they use remote sensing and generate how much carbon is on your landscape, and it's a high-tech, painless process. So any landowner is eligible.
Okay. This is an emerging and voluntary market. It's not required. Do you think this program will be ultimately successful?
I believe it has an excellent chance for success. As a marketplace, there have been two sales already. The first one involved about 120 landowners were accepted, and the second one over 500. So it's already shown growth. I think the landowners will be there. Their challenge is going to be lining up the corporate clients to purchase these credits. But I believe the landowners will be there with credits to sell. So, yes, I believe there's a chance for success.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dan. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Tammy Cushing is an extension professor at the University of Florida as a returning guest. We wanted to hear her ideas on casualty losses for timberland. Hello, Tammy.
Hello, Hayes.
With recent storms and actually fires around the country, is there a way that landowners can recover the losses of their timber value if they're affected by these type events?
Yeah, so the short answer is yes, there's a way. The reality is a little bit more complicated. Of course, what we're going to refer to is that casualty loss deduction that's available in the federal income tax code. And of course, in order to even cross that threshold, it has to be an event that really is kind of like a hurricane, a wildfire, an ice storm, tornado. And it doesn't have to be in a federal declared disaster area. That would only matter if it was a personal loss. So the reason I say it kind of depends is the loss is limited to the lower of the adjusted basis or the decrease in the fair market value of the timber. What usually happens is the basis is lowest, is the lower of those two numbers, especially if it's something the landowner has put in the ground and watched it grow over time. So if the landowner used the reforestation incentive, which allows them to deduct their reforestation expenses, then what happens is there's no basis left or very, very little basis left. And so what that means is the lower those two numbers is that basis, which results in no casualty loss deduction. It's a really tough answer to give.
So it's the lower of the adjusted basis or the fair market value, and most of that basis has already been written off, and so there's no recovery. What about the effect of a landowner who purchased land with trees on it and actually bought them with merchantable timber on it?
Sure. So that's a little bit more positive. It's still the same limitation, the lower of the adjusted basis or the decrease in fair market value. But if the trees were on the property already, then they should have allocated some of that purchase price or some of the acquisition price to the trees. And if they've done that, depending on how long ago that was and how old the trees were mature-wise, that may or may not be a big number, but it's at least something that can be deducted. They would have some basis in that timber. The more recent the acquisition, the bigger, more valuable the trees, the bigger the adjusted basis would be.
Okay. If a landowner is able to take a casualty loss, what kind of documentation should they provide to the IRS?
So there's two types of documentation we need to provide. First is proof that some event happened, something that qualifies for that casualty loss. And so really we're talking about finding weather reports that show that a tornado touched down or a hurricane impacted those specific areas, or newspaper articles, or I should say, and newspaper articles, something that says something about the damage in the area that allows the IRS to see that you were in that area with that property. The other type of documentation we want is the proof of the actual loss of the landowner. And so pictures are fantastic. If you have pictures showing the property any time prior to that, the closer the better to the event, and then kind of an after picture before you start doing any salvaging or try to do any cleanup is great. And then, of course, if there's inventory data prior to the event, that's going to be really good documentation. And then on the flip side, after the event, you're going to want to document what the standing timber is that's left and kind of the damage.
Okay. All right. That's good advice, Tammy. We appreciate that.
Thanks.
Deer hunting season is near, and we're fortunate that Ed Wilson could take some time out of his busy days to talk about hunter safety. Hello, Ed.
Hello. Good afternoon.
For hunters, it increasing their knowledge of the track that they operate on and also the location of hunters that are on the track is important. How has this changed over the years?
Well, there's a lot of things. Technology has advanced just a great deal, Hayes. It used to be a lot of guys would use a map board and hang a board washer on whatever track or stand they were using. Now there's a lot of hunter-based apps that are mapping that can zero down just about any tree stand on the property that you can mark your location. The sophistication has grown substantially in the last few years.
With these new technologies you're talking about, is it easier to do mapping, I guess, and to locate hunters and increase the awareness also of adjacent properties? Why have those things become more important in the present day?
Well, you know, when I first realized this was, I noticed the increase in heart attacks on property and just because of the aging population of hunters. And I was talking to some people, and they talked about how important it is time. Time is, you know, directs everything in terms of recovery from a heart attack. So just being able to get people to the site as quickly as possible, mapping software helps you do that. As far as hunting the self, it identifies houses and areas that you don't want to be setting up tree stands that are facing for possible shootings. And you can also kind of view what's going on the other property to see how other hunter activity, placement of food plots, is affecting deer movement on your property.
What do you see as the most common issues with tree stand placement and as it pertains to hunting club management?
Tree stand placement, I think, is a lot directed on your shooting alley. Which way are you planning on shooting? Is it off of the property, into the property, into where there could be a cabin, a house, or somewhere that people camp? It's something to consider anytime that the tree stand's being built, is where's the shot going to be taken.
Okay, good advice. Well, thank you, Ed. We appreciate that very much. And that's all the time we have for this issue. Our thanks go to Palmer Shoning, Dan Chappelle, Tammy Cushing, and Ed Wilson. There's some things about your forest land that you can't change: where it's located, what soil type it has, and where markets for your timber are located. But one thing you can change is your knowledge of the science and economics of being a successful timberland owner. We hope these programs will help you in making that a reality. On behalf of the Alabama Forest Owners Association, I'm Hayes Brown. Thank you for joining us for this issue of Capital Ideas Live.